Life can be an extraordinary adventure. More than ordinary. In the gym. At home. At work. More than ordinary. Advice. Without the new agey bullshit.
Welcome to More Than Ordinary, presented by Seven Generation Games. I'm Maria Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm Anne Maria DeMars. And we have here today our super amazing special guest, even more incredible, well, maybe not more incredible than the Incredible Hulk, but almost as incredible, at least, in many ways, Randy Couture.
How's it going?
So we are going to start today, we're talking a little bit before this, on a little bit of a somber topic, but it's something that really is very timely and significant, so we wanted to touch on that.
Well, and one of the things that I've been thinking about this weekend is Tim Haig. Our listeners don't know, he is the mixed martial artist that had a fight with a boxer this weekend and ended up declared brain dead. And then last thing I read online, his family was making arrangements to have his organs donated. And I just, my heart just dropped when I heard that. And you, Randy, have a unique perspective because you've been both a fighter and then your son Ryan's also a fighter. And I think people often don't think about the real and present danger that you could die in this sport. So I just wondered if you had any thoughts on the whole situation that happened over the last week.
Well, obviously, I think we're all a little upset to have one of our guys go down like that. I have some questions as to why he was boxing. And if the information that I have is correct, they were boxing with MMA gloves, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me either. I know this fight took place up in Canada, in Alberta. It was in Edmonton. So I have some questions about that. If you look at Tim's record over the last 10 years, he's suffered 8 knockouts. And again, he's fighting in the heavyweight division. He's a big guy. The big guys certainly hit hard, but at some point you got to mitigate and weigh out the risks involved. We all know the risks. We love our sport. We're going to compete in our sport regardless of the risks sometimes. But I certainly have some questions, and all our hearts go out to Tim's family. It's a horrible situation, and I feel like we lost a good guy, a good man. So it's not a good thing.
What is it that drives people? Because you said you know anybody who's in this sport, anybody who's in MMA, a boxing, anything like that, knows the risk. So what is it that drives people? Because I think some people just don't understand where that might come from.
I don't know. For me, I developed the passion for the individual combative sport at an early age. It started with wrestling and moved up from there. And fighting was an extension of wrestling for me. I think once you have that love for the sport, I mean, you understand. I mean, football players is no different. There's some risks involved in baseball. There's risks involved in driving race cars. I mean, just about every sport out there has some inherent risk, but it's what we love. It's a competition that we love. It's what we enjoy doing and do our best to mitigate those risks, but we're willing to take them and do what we love to do. So Tim was no different. He loved the sport. Obviously, he's been competing for over 10 years as a mixed martial artist. It's part of who we are, what we do.
I think it's one of those things, too, that's hard to explain to people if they don't feel that way. I remember when I was at the Olympic Training Center for a camp before the World Championships, and they had a sports psychologist working with us. And one of the questions they asked, I don't know why, but one of the questions they asked on this form was, if there was a drug you could take and it was legal and it guaranteed that you would be best in the world, would you take it? And I was one of those people who said, in a heartbeat. In a hot minute, I would take it. If it was legal and I could take something to be best in the world, I would do it. But the question was, and if you die a year from now, would you still do it? And I, yeah. And I didn't hesitate. And I tell my friends that, and they think that is insane. But now, you know, I have 4 kids and I have grandkids and I have a business. But when I was competing, if I had to rip my heart out in front of the referee, I probably would have done it. And it's hard to explain that to people. And my family, most of whom are academics, my brother has a doctorate, my sister has a doctorate, they all think that's completely crazy.
Well, I suppose my folks have probably looked at me over the years like I was a little bit crazy as well. But I think it's just part of what we do. It's how we're wired. We have a drive to be the best at something. And I wouldn't say at all costs, but you're certainly willing to make whatever sacrifices you need to make to achieve those goals, to get where you want to go.
Well, and I tell my kids that I coach in judo, I never cheat. I don't believe in cheating. I never cheat in any way. But you don't have to make up your own rules. I would do a backbend on somebody's arm to break it, and I have, because there's no rule against it. And again, I think for people who don't compete in combat sports, that's hard to comprehend, especially us. We live on the yuppie west side in Santa Monica. Kid gets kicked out of school. If they fight Rhonda, they tried to, and I know it's in her book, they tried to suspend her from school because a kid grabbed her around the throat and she knocked him down. And they said, there's no tolerance policy for fighting. And I said, there's no tolerance policy for being an asshole to my kid. But I think maybe there's groups of people who just don't see, well, that's not the way to settle things, physical violence, but sometimes it is.
Sometimes people don't leave you any choice. Certainly in that circumstance, that kid didn't leave Rhonda much choice. Grabbing her around the neck, I mean, what are your other options?
Well, according to the school, you're supposed to go and tell an adult. And you met my lovely daughter, Julia. By the way, she thought you were amazing. You are so... I got to get onto that later. You're the least fake Hollywood person I've met. There's a couple people who are high on my list, and generally in what I call, in quotes, the Hollywood people, they act like they like you. But you were very kind to Julia, and that shows something, because she, you know, just some 18-year-old kid hanging out.
Well, she was a lot of fun, and I think she was having a lot of fun, and that was a pretty cool place to be in the south of France. I mean, we just had such a good time down there. It was so interesting. But she's a great kid.
But that says something about you. I mean, here you are at the Cannes Film Festival, and who would go out of their way to be nice to a 16-year-old? But you did. So that says something about you as a person. Instead of my next question, I want to get on to this, is you seem like a real guy. And we meet a lot of people, Maria and I, who are not. I would say that politely. That you talk, you know, I asked Rhonda one time about somebody or other, and I said, are you guys friends? And she says, well, they're an actor. They're good at acting like they like people. How did you not become that person?
Well, I think our sport, individual combative sports, breed a particular type of character. And I think we've all had our ass kicked at one time or another. We've all had our butts handed to us. And that tends to keep you grounded. I remember those experiences. Had my butt kicked plenty of times. And it seems to happen about the time you think you're cock of the walk and nobody can touch you. It's when somebody hands you your butt. You learn to stay grounded. You learn to stay in touch with what's important and what really matters. Because when you're facing that adversity coming out of a loss, it's those people and those things that get you through that you hang on to. When all the other fanfare and all the other horse crap goes away, it's that real stuff that matters. And I've been there plenty of times. Being in this world has been a challenge. I've had to develop new filters and look at people, scrutinize people a little bit differently since becoming a more public person. And that's been difficult for me. You want to take people at face value and shake their hand and look them in the eye and assume that they're going to act and treat you the same way you treat them. And that's not always the case.
Yeah, I don't assume anybody is going to do anything they say. I'm very cynical about that. In fact, I was pleasantly shocked that you actually called in, because, you know, you're kind of, and I don't know how to say this politely, so I'll just say it because I never say anything polite. I mean, you're kind of a big time movie star. I mean, you're a big name and you took time out of your day to call into our podcast so 10,000 people can listen to it. So that's pretty awesome. And I just automatically assume people aren't going to do what they say. So you are a super pleasant exception.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
I had a question talking about, you know, fighting and risks and things. What is it like now? So it's one thing when you're the person in the cage, when you're the person fighting. What is it like, though? I mean, your son fights as well. What is that like? I mean, how different is that? Because in some ways, when you're the fighter, you're in control. When you're the parent, you're not.
Well, I think we wear a similar hat in that regard as a parent and a coach. I think that I've experienced that same thing, because we in some ways, especially when we worked with an athlete for a while, you want them to do well. And when you're standing outside the arena coaching them, you see things, and you see things you want to happen, and you can't necessarily affect them all the time. It's the same thing as a parent sitting on the sidelines. Ryan started wrestling when he was 10. And obviously that was a sport that I was fairly accomplished in. So we came up with a plan to deal with that through his wrestling career, through junior high and high school. Frankly, I just tried to stay out of his way. If he wanted my opinion or wanted my technique or tactics or whatever for me, he needed to ask me. And I told him that. I go, look, you've got coaches, you've got people that run the programs you're in. I'm going to stay out of this and be there to watch you and cheer you on. But otherwise, it's going to be up to you to come to me if you want my knowledge or my opinion about situations. And we've carried that over into fighting. And for the first couple years of his fight career, I really wasn't that big a part of his process. He was an amateur for 7 fights. And even his first couple of pro fights, I just kind of tried to stay out of his way. It was a big enough burden that he was dragging around the same last name in the same sport. And then eventually he got to a level where he turned to me and asked me for my opinion about this opponent or that opponent and what he should do, how he should approach this guy or that guy. And then now in the last several years, I've been a bigger part of the process for him in preparation. That's been enjoyable. It's been fun. It's always nerve-wracking to be a coach and certainly to be a parent on the outside, wanting your kid to succeed. But I'm happy. I see the passion he has. I see the diligence and the work that he puts in. I know he's not going to win them all, but I'm happy with the progress he's made and how he approaches this thing and puts himself out there. He does a great job. He's a champion when he wins and loses, and I'm just happy with the man that he is.
Well, and I have to say, one thing I was impressed reading up about you, and then he kind of came up in the process of studying for this, was, at least according to the internet, he also, and we make video games that teach math, so he has a degree in math, so he went through and graduated and then, I guess, worked at a bank, it said. But how did that come about then that he decided to be a fighter? There's some parents that really push their kids towards things, but it seems like almost this was something he came to through his own path, and it just happened to coincide with yours.
You know, he was a very good high school wrestler. He had a potential to go to college and wrestle at Portland State coming out of high school and decided that he didn't want to wrestle in college. He wanted to just go to school and focus on school. I admired that he had the confidence both in himself and in me to tell me that and not feel like he was being pressured to take a scholarship and go wrestle in school. He went to Western Washington. He got his degree in math. And, you know, after putting on about probably 30 pounds his freshman year, he started grappling and doing some kickboxing just for fun and for recreation. He graduated and started working for Wells Fargo around the same time that I opened the gym here in Las Vegas. And so I was looking for a gym manager, somebody I could trust and bring in to kind of hold the fort down while I was still competing and traveling a bunch. And I hired him, basically gave him the same pay and benefits that the bank was paying him and brought him down to Vegas to helped me run the gym. And he wasn't in the gym setting for, I guess, about 4 months. And he's like, Dad, I really think I want to fight. And I'm like, well, all right. And so he set about training on a more serious note and kind of gave up the management position. I had to hire a full-time gym manager and free him up to commit to training and pursuing the thing he seemed to have a passion for. And it's gone that way ever since.
Well, and let's talk about your gym, because this is one of the things that we are really interested in this podcast. I think a lot of people who listen to us are people in transition, that they're thinking about changing careers, or they're thinking about going to college, or they're about to graduate from college, or trying to figure out what they want to do in life. And I have noticed, with having been a competitor myself at the world level, and then seen Rhonda, of course, and seen all these kids coming up for 20, 30, 40 years, that people go different paths. People that their sport is their whole life, and then they can't seem to retire. And I remember a friend of mine who had won the national championship 7 times. And then we were at a tournament out of the country, and one of the younger guys were all complaining about this guy. He said, oh my God, he's so arrogant. And one of the younger guys says, he's arrogant? I've never seen him win. And he had stuck it out so long that the younger people on the team didn't remember a time when he had won. So I'm really kind of interested, how do some people like yourself make a clear path to post-sport? They go and they open a gym and they start acting, they have another career.
Yeah, I mean, retirement is a very personal thing. And when your whole person and is wrapped up in that single endeavor, it can be very difficult to come to terms with kind of the facts that your time to be the best in your sport is probably past, and to let go of that dream, to let go of that passion. And that took me a while to wrap my heart and brain around and come to that rational decision. Was I going to be the best in my weight class in my sport, which is what I set out to do and managed to do at some point. But the realistic answer to that question was no, probably not. So why am I going to grind out another camp, put my body at a potential risk of injury that it's going to affect the quality of the rest of my life? Was a rational decision and conversation I had to have with myself. It took about, I don't know, 8 or 9 months to kind of wrap my brain around where I really was in the sport. For me, something about being certainly a combative sports athlete, where you walk out into the center of that mat by yourself, there's something very egocentric about that. You almost have to be selfish to be good at it. And we carry an air of invincibility to be able to endure that adversity and walk out there in the center of that mat or that cage or wherever that is. And I think there's something that goes with that is like, oh, it's never going to happen to me. It's going to last forever. I'm never going to falter, which isn't realistic. And I feel fortunate in that my first fight in Las Vegas, I was walking down the studio walk, headed towards the arena to check in. And I walked past a store that was in the studio walk called Juicy Couture. My last name written right there in lights on the sign in the store. And that's kind of when the light bulb went off for me. There were other options. I had a college degree in foreign language and literature, which I never really have used, but I still finished. I have that degree, but certainly not a dopey guy by any stretch of the imagination. So I started to try and put some other things in line. I realized I couldn't fight forever. And so the clothing line and the gym and all this other stuff kind of came out of that realization and seeing my last name up on that store sign. And I think a lot of other fighters are still caught up in that invincibility, in that chasing that dream and that passion and feeling like it's never going to end. And I think we kind of have to wake them up in some ways and educate them that they need to come up with some other ideas. Good thing about certainly mixed martial artists is a lot of them are college educated guys. They have other things they can fall back on, but there are a large number of them that don't have anything else to do besides fight. And what the lifespan of a mixed martial artist is, what, 6 or 7 years?
We'll be right back.
Did you know that kids on average lose 2.5 months of math skills over the summer? That means that when they go back to school this fall, it's almost like everything they learned in math since mid-March never happened. Seventh Generation Games can help. Combining adventure gaming and math, our games are the perfect way to keep kids' math skills up to date. It's not flashcards or worksheets, but 3D video games and engaging apps that kids actually want to play, even when they're on summer break. Check us out at 7GenerationGames.com.
Welcome back to More Than Ordinary, presented by 7 Generation Games. I'm Marie Burns-Ortiz.
And I'm still Anne-Marie DeMars, and we still have with us our amazing guest.
He can't see you gesturing.
He can't see me gesturing because he's on Skype, but we still have Randy here.
Well, and before the break, we were talking about your gyms, and one of the things that jumped to mind is I think a lot of people think that even if you have name recognition, that that's basically all you need. You just show up and you say, hey, I'm Randy Couture, come to my gym. But I am sure it has taken a lot more work than that. And can you talk a little bit about what's gone into building that business?
Well, it's certainly been a challenge. My first gym was up in Oregon in Portland. It was called Team Quest, and I had a couple of partners there, Matt Lindland and Dan Henderson, a couple of other fighters, another guy, Robert Fallis. Four guys kind of started that gym and ran that gym. That gym is still there, and Matt Lindland still runs that gym and owns that gym. I moved to Vegas and started Extreme Couture, and Dan Henderson moved down to Temecula and started Team Hendo. Robert Fallis has since moved to Vegas and running the Gi program and working with a lot of the MMA fighters at Extreme Couture. So he's still here with me, but it's been a challenge. I don't think there's another city in the marketplace in the U.S. for MMA gyms that has six large mixed martial arts training centers, and Vegas has that. It's a very competitive market for the population base here, and obviously the epicenter for the sport of mixed martial arts is here in Las Vegas. It's a great fight town. It's where Zuffa and the UFC have been housed for a long time, since 2000, and there are just a lot of fighters that seem to migrate to this town. I think because the Ultimate Fighter is hosted and housed here over the last 10, 12 years, many of the young fighters see all the gyms that are here and they move here. So the gym has done well in that regard. And as far as the fighters, we have a great group of young fighters, both amateur and professional fighters. But the real challenge is getting regular members. The fighters don't keep a gym open. They're great for marketing and exposure, but the nuts and bolts of a gym are your regular members, the folks that want to train and learn the tactics and technique and get on the mat and be in shape. And that in this town is a real challenge with so many options and kind of an interesting town with the casino industry and everything anyway. It's been a real challenge. We try to make it a family thing and just kind of keep our nose to the grindstone and do what we do. And people seem to like that.
I think that is probably a key to your success. I mean, I've been in judo, 46 years now. I started when I was a little kid. And I've seen so many people that want to open a club, run a program. But many of them, they want to coach the best 5 or 10 people in the country. And a wise friend of mine once said, sending one gifted kid around the world to compete is not a development program. And that's not who keeps your doors open. And also, too, just if you look at your success in life, a friend of mine, Jim Pedro Sr., has been the Olympic coach, and he said that people think about his son Jimmy and Rhonda and other people he's sent to the Olympics as his successes. And he said, oh my God, if I thought over 50 years that I'd had 10 successes and the other 10,000 people I coached were all failures, I'd just shoot myself. So
that's an interesting perspective.
Well, I really get mad at people sometimes because I teach a club in South Los Angeles. It's at a middle school, Gompers Middle School, and all the kids either went to that middle school or they graduated from there and now they're in high school. And people will talk about, well, why don't you fund this kid to more tournaments? And why don't you spend more money on this kid? And to me, they're all important. And I think that's kind of the key to running a successful program, that you have to truly believe that everybody that walks into your door is important and worth your time and effort.
I think certainly with the individual combative sports, it doesn't matter if they're the best kid on the team or the worst kid on the team. That experience, that challenge, and being involved in that sport is going to affect them in a positive way for the rest of their life. And I learned that through the sport of wrestling, and I believe that about the sport of mixed martial arts as well. By facing them, forcing them to face some of their challenges and their own demons on that mat and make them work harder than they believe they can work, it will affect them in a very positive way and make them, in the end, better people.
I wanted to jump back to something you said actually in the first part, which was you were talking about your college degree. And I, like I said, reading up on you and kind of knowing what I did know and then researching more. I mean, I was saying before we started, it seems like you've had several different lives. And I mean that in a positive way. It's been one thing, and then you were in the Army, and then you went on to be a collegiate wrestler, and then you went to the UFC, and now you're a businessman, and you're acting. I mean, first of all, just what do you attribute that to, that desire to always, I guess, be pushing on and doing something more?
Well, I think early on, it stemmed from, I think we've all, in one way or another, been wounded as kids. For me, that wound came in the form of not having a father figure. My dad was never around. I think in some ways I started wrestling because I had heard the stories my whole life about what a great wrestler he was, and I thought if I wrestled, maybe I'd get his attention, maybe he'd come around a little more. And that didn't work, but I found my calling. I found the thing I was good at and where I should be. And you know, those coaches all along and all the way back to junior high school, those were the guys that taught me how to work, that taught me that discipline, and were in some ways those father figures to me that were missing in my personal life. But I think there was something about not feeling worthy. If I wasn't worthy or good enough for my own father, then I was always chasing that, trying to feel worthy and feel good enough. And at some point, I think I proved that to myself and became comfortable with myself, but I think that's where it started. And I think each of those phases, I learned something new. When I set that goal to be a state champion in high school, and I ended up my senior year winning the state championship. It was the first state champion in any sport for my high school, and it was, you know, something I was very proud of. And then it was like starting all over again in the Army. I had a very new family coming and joined the service to take care of them. I figured my wrestling days were over. As it turned out, I was stationed in Central Europe, in Germany, and there were tons of sports programs at that time at the peak of the Cold War. I ended up wrestling again, and wrestling Greco and freestyle, the Olympic styles, which is something I had never done. So it was basically starting over, but applied the same goal setting and work ethic to those sports. Ultimately ended up being an alternate on the 88 Olympic team as a soldier. Got out of the service, been an alternate on that team. A bunch of those college coaches were going, where the hell did this kid come from? We've never seen this kid before. And so the phone started ringing, and I ended up getting a college scholarship to Oklahoma State, basically from that exposure in the 88 trials. I think it was in the Army that I developed the confidence that I could compete on the international stage. And then at Oklahoma State, which is traditionally one of the best wrestling programs in our country, I learned that I could actually win at that level. And then wrestling ultimately led me to trying my hand at mixed martial arts. I saw some other wrestlers that were competing in the sport. And I think if I'd have been successful and made the 92 or the 96 Olympic team, which I was the number one guy in my weight class in our country at that time, and managed to come up short in the two Olympic trials, I would have been satisfied. I would have been happy to still be coaching at the college level somewhere right now, and I would have never forayed into mixed martial arts and tried my hand there. So as it turned out, those losses kept me motivated, kept that fire burning me, and I plunged into the mixed martial arts and trying to continue to feed that competitive side of myself through that sport. And that led 14 years later and 6 titles, and all the other stuff may not have happened had I won those medals. So I don't know. I'm kind of happy with how things turned out. I faced that adversity, managed to pick myself up, dust myself off, make myself better, figure out what I did wrong, and keep going. And I think that prepared me for a very volatile sport of mixed martial arts. There's a lot of ups and downs. Everybody talks about winning 6 championships. I'm like, okay, but that means I lost it on at least 5 occasions too. So there's that. And I'm actually more proud of dealing with those losses and coming back and being able to be successful and continue to compete at a high level when that forces a lot of people to come unraveled.
I've never been one of those people that took losing well. I got 5th in France one year. The only time the U.S. sent me somewhere, and I came home empty-handed to my country, and I cried from Paris all the way back to L.A. So, you know, at the time, it's always been really hard for me, though I try to keep in mind, and I think this is true for a lot of people, that the best things come out of the worst things. Because after that tournament, I went back and won the world championships in Austria, you know, a few months later, that, you know, I had to go sit back and see, okay, what did I do wrong? But I know Maria knows this because her and Rhonda wrote the book together, where Rhonda was saying kind of the same thing as you, that if she had won the Olympics, if she had won the world championships, you know, she got a silver medal and a bronze, that if she might have been satisfied. And instead, you have that unfinished business that keeps pushing you.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah, and I was never one to go back and watch those fights I won on tape. I didn't really care about watching those. I got the outcome that I wanted, but I can guarantee you I've watched the ones I lost dozens and dozens of times, trying to figure out what I did wrong, what I could do better, how I could be better, and not experience that loss again. I don't think any of us likes to lose. We do our damnedest and train our hardest to not lose, but it's part of life. It's going to happen, and so how you respond to it is probably what's most important.
Like Amory was saying, we have a lot of people that listen to it. They're looking at life changes, whether it's changing jobs or going back to school or something like that. And you got out of the Army, you know, you were probably 6 years older than a lot of your classmates at the university. What was that like? Do you think you had a different appreciation for it? I mean, how much do you think your experience differed?
Well, I think that maturity certainly helped me. It certainly helped me in my studies and juggling being a full-time athlete and a full-time student, which is a challenge for a lot of folks. I was certainly at 25 years old, a lot more mature than the average 17, 18, 19-year-old that's getting out of high school and going to college. I had a family. I had two kids and was married at the time, and there was some responsibility involved and wrapped up in that. It wasn't just about me. And so I was very motivated both on the wrestling mat and academically. I think that being 25 and having been in the service for 6 years, immediately, even though I was a freshman, put me in a little bit different position on the team. I was a guy with some experience. I'd already been to the Olympic trials and been pretty high in that system. And that's what a lot of those guys that were coming out of high school and going to Oklahoma State, that was one of their goals, was to make the Olympic team, not just be an NCAA champion, but to make the Olympic team. And I'd already kind of been down that road for a while. So it put me in a little bit of a leadership position, even as a freshman through the 4 years of school there. And I don't think I realized it at the time. I mean, I was just being me and doing what I do, but I certainly think that talking now to a bunch of my friends, that was a shoe or a hat that I wore for sure.
Well, we don't want to take up too much of your time, so I only have one or two more questions. And then the last part is we always ask people for a tip. But I have one more question before we get to the tip section. And that is, I don't see you with a posse. I mean, when I see you, don't have a bunch of hangers on entourage. And we've had a couple people on our show that talk about Roddy Ferguson, who's on the 2004 Olympic team, put it, "If tell me who you walk with and I'll tell you who you are." Other people say you lay down with the dogs, you get up with fleas. But basically, I think Maria's thing is you're the average of five people you spend the most time around. But can you talk a little bit about the circle you have around you? Because I see some people in your situation, they've got the whole entourage and people whose job is to stand there and go, "Good job, Randy." And the people whose job it is to run out and get you a Snickers bar at 3 a.m. You don't have those people.
No, I kind of like to do those things for myself. It feels weird to me. And this is one of the things that I don't think I'll ever get used to, being on a set and being in acting situations. You have these people, then that's their job, is to kind of dote on you and get you a coffee or whatever you need. And I just, it feels really weird to me. And I think I just don't know how to take it. I'm just used to doing those things for myself and always have. And I think I always will. I don't need somebody to do those things for me. My friends have been my friends for a long, long time. Some of them from high school, some of them from college, some of them from that time I spent in the Army. That's one of the only things that I really miss about fighting, was that was the impetus to bring all of those groups of people together. They would show up at the fights in Boston or at the fights in Vegas, and I would get to see all of them in the same place at the same time. And it was like old home week. I love that about fighting, and that's one of the few things that I miss. Now, a bunch of those guys show up to my son's fight, so it's fun, even more fun for me, because I'm not focused on going out there on Saturday night and competing. I get to relax a little bit. Ryan has to carry that burden, but I get to see those guys still. But those are the guys that are my true friends. They're not asking me about fighting. They're not asking me about acting or any of that stuff. Whether that stuff is here or not, they don't care. They know me when I was riding a 10-speed to work every day, and knew me when I was driving a Ford Escort, you know, that was broke down half the time. Those are the guys that are my friends because they know me and they're real. And I think that's kind of what I meant about remaining that humility through that adversity of losing. All those kind of hangers on, especially when you've lost a fight, tend to go away pretty quickly. It's the real people in your life that matter, that stick it out, that are there through the adversity or the good times. And those people tend to show themselves pretty quickly.
And so our third segment of More Than Ordinary is where we ask our guests to give us a tip. And it can be a tip about anything. It can be a tip about life or parenting or sports or building a business. And you seem like the type that probably gets asked for a lot of advice. How did you do it? But what is one piece of advice you find yourself either giving a lot or wishing that someone had told you when you were coming up?
Well, I think it's taken me time to figure out what my vocation was. And Vocation is a word that comes from the Latin vocare, which means to call. And we talked about my father and feeling like I fell into wrestling kind of on accident. And it turned out that I feel like combative sports and wrestling certainly were my calling. I developed a very strong passion and love for the sport because I had some good coaches early on. Coach Casebeer and Coach McAvoy were great coaches when I was in junior high and high school that made it fun, made me work my ass off, but made it fun. And I think having that passion is, you have to find that passion. You know, the world may not need another accountant unless you're passionate about accounting and numbers, and you're probably doing the wrong thing. Find that thing that you have a passion for. Trust in your heart. It knows more than you'll ever realize. Knows things more than you can ever imagine. And you can never be brave if you never feel scared.
Well, I don't think we can top that for a note to end on. Is there somewhere people can find you if they wanted to find your gym? Is there a website? If they wanted to buy your clothes? I actually thought you ran a clothing company, and Maria told me you ran a gym because I've seen so many people wearing Extreme Couture clothes.
Yeah,
so,
I have both, actually. You have ExtremeCoutureClothing.com, and then there's ExtremeCoutureMMA.com. That's the gym and the clothing company. And then I'm on Facebook, just Randy the Natural Couture is the fan page, and XC Natch on Instagram, Randy_Couture on Twitter.
Okay, and we will put all those on the website in the links. And so you can, if you're in Las Vegas, you can go to the gym and train. Or if you just want to look like you go to the gym and train, I know so many people listening to this, you could buy the clothes online. That's actually a really smart, smart strategy. So, alrighty. Well, that's all we got.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I know you're really
busy. Thank you, guys.
I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the More Than Ordinary podcast.
For more information, please go to our website, 7GenerationGames.com. And that's 7 as in the number 7, GenerationGames.com.
If you'd like to learn more about math and history, or increase your vocabulary while at the same time having fun, you can purchase our games at 7GenerationGames.com/buy.
You can also donate and help a much-deserving student.
And as always, please tell a friend and don't forget to rate us on iTunes.
It's never too late to be more than ordinary.